Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Now, 92.9 FM ESPN presents Memphis's biggest sports columnist.
You ain't got to do nothing, homeboy. You ain't writing nothing. No, you ain't. Ain't writing nothing. I ain't letting him write. He ain't getting no interview.
It's the award-winning Jeff Calkins from the Daily Memphian and the Jeff Calkins Show.
I don't get no interview. I know. I'm good.
On 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is something they call a groundbreaker. So let me first apologize to the shirts and the ties for your makeup. Cause I make you ugly. As soon as it drops, we're on a rampage. Bubbles popping up before you know it. There's rubble in the dust, cause we'll be pushing it up. Somebody say, you gentlemen, what you're about to witness is no illusion.
Good morning, everybody, and happy Monday. Today on the show, Chris Harrington's going to join us. I think that is our lone guest. Is that right? Chris Harrington.
He is the lone guest today.
He is the lone guest because we have other things to talk about amongst ourselves and with y'all. And Chris and I, however, did have the pleasure of sitting down with the Grizzlies management, the new Grizzlies management hierarchy, Jason Wexler, and our man, Mr. Klieman. Klieman?
Klieman.
Klieman. Zach Klieman.
I believe it's Klieman.
Zach Klieman on Friday, the first independent interview of the two. And we came away with some impressions, I think. I think that's true. And we will get into all of that. I kind of have a peculiar day today. I have to duck in and out for various reasons. But I will be here for much of the show. And Jeffrey will be here for the rest of the show. And it'll be a choose-your-own-adventure sort of a proceedings today. I also will report with some degree of humility on my stint as offensive coordinator of the Memphis Tigers. I will give you a full report on that. That was Friday night, and I will give
We saw you retired on Twitter, or you resigned.
I did. I don't want to spoiler alert.
Right,
I did.
I mean, that was technically your spoiler.
I did. Well, yes, but everybody doesn't follow me on Twitter who listens to the radio show.
Well, then should be a crime.
They absolutely should. Jeff, G-E-O-F-F. _ Calkins is where you follow me on Twitter. And you can follow Jeffrey at
jwright929 ESPN.
Yeah. But since Jeffrey went ahead and let the cat out of the bag, I have.
Well, you could have got out on top. The bigger question is, did you resign or did you retire?
I have resigned my position. I've not filed retirement papers. I have resigned my position to spend more time with my family, is what I have done.
Yep.
Just like Urban Meyer.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. All right, I don't know if you all noticed yesterday, but Tiger Woods won a golf tournament, and it was a big girl golf tournament with the prize. They have some gaudy green jacket as the prize.
And still fits.
Still fits, he said. And I will say this, Jeffrey called it. You did call it.
I called you on Thursday to tell you. I go, this is real.
Was it Thursday you called
yes.
me? He's going to do this?
Yes.
I think it was Thursday you said he's going to do this.
Yes, because I remember exactly where I was. I was watching. He was on the 13th hole, and he had just hit, like, his ninth straight iron shot within 15 feet or 20 feet of the pin. And I was like, this isn't a fluke. And at that golf course, if you start hitting your irons like that, you can take it to its knees.
Well, he took the country to his knees. Mm-hmm. And listen, it is not.
I see it so many times.
It is not often that you can get Barack Obama and Donald Trump both
on the same side.
On the same side, right? That's where this was. Explain your feelings yesterday.
Yesterday was
the greatest sports moment you've seen.
Yesterday, I think there's a guy I follow that I think summed
it up. You don't remember Jack, by the way. You don't remember Jack.
No, because I've watched all the documentaries. That was 1986, and I'm born in 88. But
yeah, so you
I've watched everything, and to me, what this moment was if America had an awesome soccer team, male soccer team in the World Cup that actually could win the World Cup.
Right.
Yesterday, to me, seemed like, because everyone's sitting up, like, people woke up early in the morning, for God's sakes, to watch this, and everyone was experiencing it together. Like,
Have we seen ratings? Now, ratings for this Saturday were...
I'm going to bet it was a little higher than Face the Nation would have typically have been.
you told me ratings for Saturday were...
Ratings for Saturday set a record for a five-year high for any golf tournament on a Saturday, breaking his own record from the British Open.
Right. And then what they did was, because they started everything early because of rain and finished early, it was actually fantastic. They should do that every single Sunday. It's unbelievable. You get to finish up around, what time was it, 2 or something?
Yeah, it was like 1:30 or 2,
and then you get the whole rest of the day.
It's
great.
It's like the British Open all over
again. It was fantastic. Yeah. You had the nation at the edge of its seat, very clearly. And I don't know. It just felt like everyone was watching. And listen, I will tell you that – so Jeffrey comes at it from the perspective of a golf guy, right?
Yes.
You are a golf guy.
Yeah, but I don't force golf down anyone else's throat.
No. Did you watch every moment that was televised?
I had 3 televisions going at once with the – so DirecTV did – because DirecTV is owned by AT&T now, AT&T, of course, is a corporate partner of the Masters Tournament of Augusta National.
So what do you get on other screens?
So stream –
you don't get on
so
CBS.
Feature one stream, of course, was our guy, Tiger Woods. You had to – so I
– there was a just dedicated Tiger Woods?
There was a feature group page. There was a feature group channel, 703, for all you heroes out there that I told on Twitter, and – I can't deal with – CBS is actually not good at broadcasting golf if you actually like to watch golf. Now, if you like to watch Nick Faldo and Butler Cabin and give you a nice diatribe, and then if you need to see some 3.5-minute introduction, that's great for you. But I had to watch Tiger. I had to know every single shot I wanted to be in there. So I had that on TV 1. TV 2 was the CBS broadcast, and then TV 3 – is what they called the Masters Mosaic, in which I had 4 feeds. I have, of course, the feature group, the CBS broadcast, Amen Corner broadcast, as well as 15-16 broadcast. But more importantly, I had an up-to-the-minute leaderboard on the left-hand column. So that allowed to have the best watching.
So in terms of greatest sports moments that you have witnessed either personally or on TV.
Sure.
Where does that rank?
It's the greatest sports moment I've seen. The only other thing that I was like, I was trying to, the only other thing in terms of like pure bewilderment that I saw was, I think, the 2015 Game 7, LeBron, the beating the 73.
That was unbelievable.
Like, I think that's up there. Obviously, I'm biased, but I thought.
I've seen Kirk Gibson's home run.
Well, I was going to say, Eli's.
A legendary moment.
The helmet catch,
that Super Bowl was incredible. But so then I come at it from the perspective of not particularly a golf guy.
Sure.
You know, I've covered the Masters, I don't know, 10 times, and I've covered the FESJC every year, and that's basically it, right? And the U.S. Open 1 year. But I am not a guy who sits there and watches golf all the time. Just not. And I've never played it in my life.
I wouldn't recommend starting.
Is that true?
Yes.
Lots of people start late and enjoy it and get great enjoyment out of golf. I'm actually afraid that if I started, I'd enjoy it. And it would take up my time and money.
I would just tell you to keep, if you're between golf, just keep playing tennis.
I've stopped playing tennis, too, because I've gotten bad at it.
Right, but so tennis at least is better cardio.
No, I just run.
Like they're both they're both frustrating, but at least with tennis, like you're moving.
And I got some blowback. There were on Twitter, there were those who were like, well, there were two kinds. There was one guy who was on Twitter who was saying, yeah, this is great if you like people who like porn, cheat on their wives, mm-hmm. Are kind of ass. A-holes, and I don't know what other disparaging whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was...
But this guy's a Phil guy.
And then there was Sarah Spain, is that her name, who said, from ESPN, who said, you all realize, don't you, that Tiger brought this on himself. Like,
sure.
all of this
mm-hmm.
gloating and glorying and whatever, but... He brought this on himself. And then mm-hmm. there were other people who said simply, I don't know how you can call this a redemption story when we don't know if there's personal redemption or not. We don't know if he's a good guy. We don't know if any of that's true. He just won a golf tournament. What's the redemption story in winning a golf tournament? And all that's fine. Like anyone can, people can look at this however they want. I think the overwhelming number of Americans, were giddy with happiness to watch this. And it's not complicated to figure out. At his zenith, Tiger Woods was the greatest golfer who ever played. And it's not close. At his best was better than anyone else's best.
Yes. When peak Tiger Woods golf, even Jack couldn't compete with it.
Right. Now, so there was that. And back then he was a... immortal. He was a superhero. He was also disrupted golf because he didn't look like other golfers, and he was so he.
It wasn't just that; it was also like.
And then he was an unbelievable player,
right?
And he was
celebratory.
It was the whole thing. It was the red shirt. He was bulletproof. You could not win when Tiger. He would just lay waste to fields. He would do things that were not possible in golf. And he was
winning major championships by 15 shots.
And then there was a segment of America that loved him. And then there was a segment of America that found him to be cold or that pulls for underdogs and couldn't get their arms around it because they pull for underdogs and they don't like to see someone just
laying waste
to a field. He won
every time.
Won everything.
It felt so futile.
It felt so futile. And so back then, Tiger was wildly watched and popular, but there was a segment of people who pulled against him because that's what you do when there's a juggernaut, right? You
Absolutely.
Have some people who are in favor and some people who are against. And then he went into the wilderness. And the
boy did he.
And the wilderness was of every type. It was back surgeries. It was physically breaking down. It was truly wondering if he would ever put aside the personal stuff for a moment. Just from a physical perspective, it was being totally unclear whether he would ever play golf again.
100%.
And or walk again. And that's not even hyperbole. Like that's where we were. It's if you took away all the other stuff, this would still be a stunning story from a guy who went from the top to the bottom, largely because of a physical breakdown where his back didn't work, which is kind of tough in golf, is my understanding.
Yeah, it's very difficult to play golf when you are in massive back pain. Take, for instance, Freddie Couples, someone that's always beloved. Freddie Couples has a bad back,
right,
and he can't play. You know what the difference between Tiger Woods and Freddie Couples is? Tiger's back's been operated on at least three times, if not four.
Right. So then you mix in the personal... missteps, we'll call them, where he is turned into a joke and by his own flaws, he is turned into a joke his own decisions. It turned into a joke. He is a we've got mug shots of him being arrested. We've got drug right issues and driving while impaired. We've got sex therapy. We've got
nude
photos. Mm-hmm. Like the whole personal destruction of Tiger Woods happens on top of it. And so, and then you've got all these hot takes. Will he ever play? Will he ever win? Will he ever win another major? And for most, you have people saying he will not, he will not, he will not. Indeed, our friend Mike Francesca is amazing. Like
his ability to be wrong.
I would not want everyone to tape some people to tape this show every day and throw it back in my face when I'm wrong. But just for fun, here's Mike Francesca just last week.
I wouldn't be worried if it was Memorial Day. What do you want about
not
the Masters?
All.
Go ahead.
Yes. Tiger. Two things. One, Tiger's chance. What do you think?
Nil.
Really?
I don't think he's going to keep his drive in the fairway. I don't think he can do it. And also, I don't think you can be 141st in the world under 10 feet putting and win at the Augusta. I don't think you can. He's 141st in the world from inside 10 feet, and you can't win at Augusta. You got to make too many putts at Augusta from 7 and 8 feet to have any chance. Yeah, so I apologize. I didn't know there was a last one. I cannot see Tiger winning.
Many doubted we'd ever see it. But here it is. The return to glory. God.
So,
Jeff, he was no longer in 2017, in July of 2017, so under 2 years ago.
Wasn't he ranked in the thousands?
He was outside of the top 1,000 golfers in the world. Like, to put that into perspective, I don't know if there's someone who regularly plays on the web.com tour that would be ranked outside of the top 1,000 if he is a card carrying member.
Right.
It's unbelievable.
So then you have him coming back, and you have – and the truth of the matter is he's been playing well, and it's one of the reasons why going into this tournament you were optimistic, and then Thursday when you saw it, you were
– And when I also saw that guy put $80,000 on him to win at 14-1, that was like Tuesday or Wednesday.
The books took a bath, by the way.
Oh, they got – well, that's the problem. So there – this is the problem. It's been so long since we've been here that the sports books even might have forgotten, like
right. –
Oh God, this is not good for us. Because when Tiger wins, like they have to change the odds. They have to always like when he wins, it is just a bath because everyone bets on him.
And so then you have this guy who is balding now.
Oh yeah,
middle aged now. Humbled now. Who has two children. Who had never been to Augusta before, who knew their dad as this great golfer once upon a time. They'd heard that, but they'd certainly never seen it. And you had him getting back to a moment of triumph that we never knew if we would see. And let's be honest, he never knew if he would see. And And of course it's a story of redemption. Someone said, how can it be a story of redemption when he brought it on himself? Well, that's what redemption is. It involves, if it was just an injury, there's no redemption involved. Then it's just got come back from an injury. Then it's Tommy John, right? Tommy John, who was a great pitcher, and then he had Tom John surgery, and then he came to act to win a whole lot more games.
Yeah. Like if this back surgery becomes prevalent, it's going to be the Tiger Woods surgery.
But that's not redemption. That is a comeback.
Sure.
But that's not a redemption. And am I confusing professional accomplishment with personal redemption? Not really, because I understand. Listen, we're simple people. Like, we like a feel-good story. And we like to know. This is my view of it anyway. I will tell you, I have screwed up so many times in so many ways. And it is... And I watch that, and I think, And maybe that's what happens. We all watch it, and we get out of it what we want to get out of it, right? A little bit. It's that kind of a story. And I think, isn't it wonderful that as human beings, you can fall, and you can keep at it, and you can have a moment again, and it doesn't have to destroy you forever. That's all. It's simple. It doesn't mean I'm thinking he's Mother Teresa now. I've got no idea what his personal life like. I do gather that he, in fact, even in the midst of the bloody divorce that he had, his ex-wife said that
Ela Nordgren.
Yeah, said that he was a good dad.
Yes. It's like the one thing she, like, despite of, that woman had probably been put through hell and back at that point in time. And despite all of that, the one thing that she didn't want to contest, the one thing that she wanted clearly stated for the record is Tiger is a good dad.
Yeah. So, again, I don't know if he's a good human now or whatever, but I know that he had to persevere. I know that people say that he's humbled and different. I know that we like to see people come back. I don't like seeing people destroyed forever. I thought it was the most natural thing in the world that America would want to watch this, because now all the people who rooted for him because he was the great Tiger Woods, they're still rooting for him. But all the people who are rooting for him because they see a guy who has been humbled, who has been physically wrecked, who has been dragged, who's dragged himself, who's put himself on the back covers of the New York Post and mocked, has a moment of triumph. And I don't know how you can't watch that and be moving. And then
there's
for
a
his
third
kids,
group I would add to that.
What?
There's a group of people that realizes golf is a completely different sport
when
or
he's,
entertainment product.
When he's involved.
When he's in. Like,
yeah.
There have been even exciting moments like Jordan Spieth near going for the Grand Slam. Rory McIlroy's kind of got a little of that star quality. Brooks Koepka winning three majors in which he can basically only entered four. Like, there have been some really cool moments. And then you realize that yesterday, like, none of that matters at all. There is one guy that matters.
Right.
Phil winning, it
Ron
doesn't
Olson
matter.
Ron Olson called me in the midst of this and said, are you watching this? This is a great tournament. He said, you know, it was a great tournament.
Jam-packed leaderboard, stars on the leaderboard, talent on the leaderboard.
And because it was they were playing the way they had,
yes.
It was even more bunched up.
Exactly.
It was unbelievable. And so Ron Olson called me and said, are you watching? Like, there was the drama at 12.
Yes.
When Molinari puts his ball in the water.
Hero.
Hero. That was a key moment.
Yes.
That was a key moment.
There's some of us have to tell the whole story. Some of us have to take the role that you don't want to take. But Frankie played his part.
Yes, he did. So, but the truth of the matter is none of it would have mattered. None of all the interesting golf that was happening around Tiger would have mattered but for Tiger.
Oh, yes. Completely agree.
It would not have mattered. And it would have been a huge come down had he actually not
won.
And
for the record, for the most part, growing up, I was a Phil guy. My brother picked Tiger in 97. And for whatever reason, if you and your brother are like within 2 years of each other, you can't ever like the same thing.
Right.
So, and on the flip side, I picked Florida with Spurrier and the Fun and Gun. So he had to pick Florida State. And, you know, that's just a tough existence. But the same thing, like, I don't understand how if you are a sports fan, you can't recognize that yesterday was unbelievable.
It was truly an extraordinary day. It does then beg the question as to whether he will come to Memphis or not. And I called, so in the obviously World Golf Championships,
mm-hmm.
Now coming to Memphis. He's won 18 of them.
Yeah.
He likes playing in them,
mm-hmm.
And so you would think he would come. On the other hand, it's the week after the British Open. He has never played the week after the British Open, and so you would think he would not come.
I don't know what to think, because...
Well, then, so I call Jack Sammons, who's, of course, the chairman of the tournament, and he is funny, because he had Molinari in his pool, or whatever he was in.
Yeah.
So, but he... He said, listen, we're not going around telling people Tiger's coming.
No, and in fairness, I've never once even heard remotely that.
Right. It's like they've sold most of their hospitality, which, by the way, is much more expensive. If you want to be involved in the tournament now, it's a different kind of a tournament. It costs more money. It's like they've sold, but they're nearly sold out. It is going to be a transformative event for Memphis. And I actually, a friend of mine said he must be doing backflips with happiness. And I said, yeah, I don't, after talking to him, not really, because you don't want it to be, if every great golfer in the world is here and not Tiger, you don't want it to feel like it's somehow disappointing, right? I mean,
completely agree.
And they're all, like, Dustin Johnson's going to be here. Yep. Royal McIlroy's yep. going to be here. All these great players
amazing
are going to be incredible. Like, everyone's going to be here.
Mm-hmm. And they don't matter.
And you don't want it to be somehow disappointing because Tiger's not here.
Yeah.
And it's if he doesn't come now, it's that much more disappointing because he's that much more relevant now. And so so he wasn't really doing backflips. He said he was encouraged. They're in touch. But that they won't know until the plane lands and Tiger gets off. The plane, by the way, is Mark Cuban's tricked mm-hmm. out 767
yeah.
that he happens mm-hmm. to own. And in order to make it easy for the golfers to get from the British Open to Memphis, they've already rented Mark Cuban's 767 to where every seat is a beautiful first class seat to get them here in style. So he's making it as easy as possible. In the wake of his victory yesterday, it was interesting because Tiger said two things, and you can interpret it however you want.
Mm-hmm.
He said, on the one hand, he's not going to play as much this year. So that was kind of, ooh, well, that's not good. Like, he's not going to play as much this year. He's never played at the week after the U.S. Open, the British Open. The Memphis tournament's the week after the British Open, and Tiger's not going to play as much this year. It sounds like he's not coming. On the other hand, he said he's not going to play this much this year because he played too much last year in order to qualify for World Golf Championships.
Yes.
Well, this is a World Golf Championship.
Correct.
So which way do you read the tea leaves from yesterday? And then I have people emailing me saying he's already rented a house in Southwood.
Well, yeah, that doesn't
mean... But you do that anyway.
Yes, like the tour could have like the tour could have rented it in his name or whatnot. Like you can cancel a rental.
What I actually heard was this, is that he rented a house
mm-hmm.
and the conditions are the furniture will all be moved out of the house.
Mm-hmm.
It will be repainted
mm-hmm.
before he comes.
In red and black.
And I don't know what colors, but like he wants everything to be clean and like that's what happens, mm-hmm. right? His furniture will be moved in.
Like it.
Then when the tournament's over, his furniture will be moved out. It'll be repainted back into the original colors, and the new furniture will come back in. How about that? Do you believe that story? This is an email I got yesterday.
So the first time I'd heard this story was...
Had you heard that story?
It's this year with the whole World Golf Championship. That seems wildly, wildly impractical that he would do that in everywhere he's going to play.
He hasn't. What is he? How much is he worth? It's nothing.
Well, I know he was liquid enough at one point to stroke over $100 million check.
Right. It's nothing. Like it's nothing.
Right. It's, but like right, so,
he's not painting it himself.
Right. So, but here's my question: does he have his like? So does he have like the furniture that he moves into other people's houses? Because he's not clearly taking his furniture from his own house, right?
I think he has. It's a type of furniture that
right.
he uses.
So he has his secondary.
He has a team of people who yes. do this and who provide
Tiger-like. Tiger invented the golf team.
And I don't know, it's Tiger-like golf, Tiger-like furniture.
Yes.
They just make it happen for him.
Mm-hmm.
And what could it possibly cost? I mean, I don't know. It couldn't cost that much for when you're Tiger. I mean, he can literally pay for anything he wants. This is a drop of the bucket. I mean, I'm not saying it's happening.
$740 million, according to most estimates.
I would say if you're
I don't
worth
know how much
$740
that's
million, you could probably make that happen. Again, these are the stories that are going around. That's all I'm describing
Correct.
Them as, is stories that are going around. Jack Salmon says we'll know when he gets off the plane.
Yes.
And and I
well,
don't
Well, technically, I think technically they
have
will
to
know
before then. Right.
They'll know the Friday before.
Right.
The Friday, well, excuse me.
But he could still withdraw.
Well, no, no, no. But no, no, no. So here's the thing about World Golf Championships. This is why they're awesome. This is what former FedEx St. Jude champion Daniel Berger did, in which he kind of won me over forever. So this tournament does not have a cut, and therefore you receive an automatic payment. That's one of the incentives to get the biggest names. So Daniel Berger, if you withdraw before the tournament,
you don't get the payment.
Goose egg. Daniel Berger went and hit a tee shot in Akron 2 years ago, had his caddy go get the ball, officially withdrew, still made 50 grand.
That is impressive.
Might say it's manipulating a system. I might say he's playing the ball as it lies.
I got a call Saturday from my friend John Martin.
Yes.
And he said, guess who's over here?
Who is over there?
Chip Wiggins.
Thought Mike Miller.
Chip Wiggins from Affordable Blinds was over at the Martin household. And good for John Martin. Mm-hmm. And good for Chip Wiggins. He gave him a great deal. He did exactly what I said he does. So you set an appointment up. They have a mobile showroom. They come out. They size everything up for you. They measure everything for you. They show you all your options. And then you say, you know what? This is unbelievable that you can do this for this price, this quickly, this easily, and transform my house in this fashion. So John, being the smart man that he is, said, let's do that. And he's got plantation shutters that will be installed, and it can be done within 1 to 3 weeks. John called me to express his absolute delight with Chip Wiggins and Affordable Blinds, and you can share in that delight if you give him a call at 753-5822, 753-5822, or just pop over to their Facebook page, their Affordable Blinds Facebook page. They got videos of all the various things that they can do. Their website is affordableblindsofmemphis.com. All right, here's what we're going to do. Phone number is 535-3776, 535-3776. When we come back, we will be taking your calls on what you thought yesterday. And are you cynical about the Tiger redemption story, or were you moved by the Tiger redemption story? How do you feel about what we witnessed yesterday? Where does it rank in your own pantheon of great sports moments? We'll do that when we return. Again, 535-3776. It's Jeff Dawkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Dawkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Sleep Easy Mattress and Furniture by Michael Zeller. That's the place where you can save 50-80% off retail store prices every single day of the week. That's on beautiful mattresses like Serta, iComfort, Simmons, Room, Beauty Rest. But honestly, it's also on any kind of furniture you need. Whole showroom full of furniture from Signature Design by Ashley and Benchcraft. There's a reason that if you pop over to the Better Business Bureau, you'll see nearly 500 positive reviews, which is more than any other Mid-South mattress or furniture company. People love Sleepy Z's. And by the way, if you mention my name, Jeff Dawkins, you will get an additional 10% off anything in the store. So get it. Sleepy Z's located 2790 Kirby Witten Road at the corner of Summer Avenue, right next to Hollywood Feed. Give them a call, 692-6200. Sleepy Z's by Michael Zellner, where you never wake up on the wrong side of the bed. Okay, the phone number is 535-3776, 535-3776. I was just thinking, Jeffrey, and I'm going to have to step out here in a minute. I'm going to let you take some of these phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of great comebacks,
yeah,
great personal comebacks,
yeah, yeah.
Not like the Patriots over the Falcons.
Yes.
Right? I was looking some of these up.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are just injury related.
Sure.
So I'm not like the Tommy John thing, right?
Yeah.
How about these among the best comebacks?
Okay.
This is in addition to sort of where this moment ranks for you all in history and what you thought yesterday. Here are some of the others is Jordan's count as a comeback?
I don't think so, because Jordan's wasn't physical.
Well, it wasn't. No.
Are you talking about from the first retirement?
I'm talking about the first retirement.
Yeah, to me,
he goes away for a year and a half, comebacks, and wins three more titles. Great personal story. It doesn't have to have every element that this one has.
No, but like to me, on top of that, like Jordan was still in his prime. Like Jordan coming back and winning championships.
That was still a great story.
Yeah, but it's not. To me, Tigers was better.
I don't think there's anyone that's better. I don't think there's anyone that's better.
No, I mean, I agree.
Here's one that I hadn't thought about, though. Andre Agassi in 1995 was number one in the world.
Okay.
He then, by the time in 97, he is 141 in the world.
Yep.
He's doing crystal meth.
Yeah. It was all the rage in the 90s.
And he comes back, and in 2002, at the time at least, became the oldest player to become number two in the world rankings.
One Grand Slams. To me, like, that is...
That's pretty good.
That one was up there.
How about Magic? Magic steps away for a year because he's got a disease.
Yeah, he's HIV positive.
And he comes back and he plays again.
Yeah.
How about Ali going to 3.5 years? That's, to me, that's the best one.
Yes. Well, I think it's Ali or Ben Hogan.
Ben Hogan's was... But that was purely injury-related.
Sure.
Purely injury. There's
correct.
No and
he
Ollie's,
literally got ran over by a bus.
Right. Ben Hogan's was unbelievable.
Yes.
And Ollie 3.5 years away from boxing.
Yes.
For reasons of conscience.
Correct.
And then he comes back in world championship.
Yes.
If just in terms of, it's funny when we're talking boxing, Foreman comes back at 40.
How many times did Foreman retire?
And wins the championship at age 45. That one felt more comical than whatever. I think, honestly, for different reasons, they're very different. But I think this story and the Ali story are the two best comebacks.
I would throw Hogan in there.
And Hogan. You can tell people about Hogan. Okay.
Yeah.
I got to step out. The phone number is 535-3776, 535-3776. Jeffrey's going to handle this for a little bit. Chris Harrington's going to join us in a little bit. And I will be back in a little bit. But I'm turning it over to Jeffrey now.
Let's start first with Lazarus in Whitehaven. Lazarus, how were you feeling yesterday about Tiger?
Well, Jeffrey, I'll start this off by saying I am not a golf guy.
Sure.
I don't mind playing golf, but as a spectator sport, I put it on the same page as darts and bowling.
Yeah, on television, it is not good.
That being said, when Tiger's in the mix, I watched all 18 holes yesterday, and I loved every second of it. Tiger is a true showman out there. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah, there's no question. Like, I don't necessarily think that I grew up like a Tiger hater, but in general, like, it's just undeniable. Like, once I almost think, like, the fact that, like, we lost him for so long and he wasn't like this made you realize, like, oh my God, this guy is all that matters. All right, let's go to Madison in Knoxville. Madison, how are you feeling about it?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yep, you're on. How are you feeling about it?
Hey, yesterday was amazing. I think that what took away from yesterday, though, was Tiger winning the Tour Championship last year because that was such an emotional moment and the tears. And I actually ranked that over the Masters yesterday, but Tiger winning a major, he's back, baby, let's go.
Yes, I think there's two parts of it. A, the Tour Championship, I think, was probably a cooler moment because the tour just allowed fans to go wild. They like, you know, they let them go into the fairway and you just saw, like, it was just unbelievable to recognize what it was. But in terms of, I mean, I've already seen early ratings from yesterday. It did around 1:30 Eastern time. So 12:30 our time, it was a 12-9 with a 22 share. So that means one in four and a half Americans were watching Tiger Woods yesterday. So, like, I agree that I think you can't have yesterday without the Tour Championship because we realized, like, he was starting to compete in big, big tournaments. But at the end of the day, like, God, the Masters is, like, it's the only golfer that matters. And let's be real, as someone who loves golf passionately, as I do myself, the only tournament that matters. Like, I was just really thankful yesterday that, with all due respect to every PGA of America member out there, that thank God it wasn't at the PGA. Thank God it was the Masters. Like, it just adds a completely different element to it.
Absolutely. It's a great thing for the game of golf.
Oh, there's no question. Madison, we appreciate the phone call. That was the other thing that I was discussing with my friends yesterday. I, like, Fred Ridley, when he goes, you know, Tiger, this is a long time coming, and we're just so glad. I'm like, well, no, duh. Of course you are. Like, yes. Like, your bottom line just got greatly improved. Like, anyone in the golf business is just, like, looking back 10 to 15 years, realizing how great golf was. Like, oh, God, please just give us another five-year run. Just give us another five-year run. Let's go to DeMarcus and Frazier. DeMarcus, how are you feeling about it? DeMarcus, you're on. How are you feeling about it yesterday?
Oh, feel it great. Tiger Woods winning the Masters was absolutely phenomenal. I didn't, unfortunately, get a chance to see it because I was asleep, because I didn't know they changed the time due to weather issues, but I ended up watching the replay, and it was phenomenal. It was almost as good. It was just as good as Kofi winning the WWE title.
Oh, yes.
It was great.
Same. I was a little more emotional with Kofi winning the WWE title, and even though, you know, that's predetermined, there was the idea that Kofi had never been there, so like it was the culmination of all the years that he had given us as fans. That one was a little, but yesterday it was the same thing. Like, you know, my buddies and I were running around the house, we're looking like idiots. We scared the absolute crap out of my dog. It was unbelievable. It was just pure electricity. All right,
Appreciate you, Demarcus.
All right, let's go now to Mike in Cordova. Mike, how are you feeling?
Hey, what's going on? Two things. First off, what you said about Jordan is correct. He was in his prime, man. You don't count that as a comeback. We all know why he left.
Mm-hmm.
It was his investment problem.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Problems. Okay. Secondly, for me personally, the Tiger thing wasn't that huge. Now, I'm not saying it wasn't. I got a best friend, and I was with him when Tiger won, and he's been a Tiger fan his whole life. And I was happy for him because his hero.
They've endured so much.
Yeah. And, I mean, for me personally, I was like, yeah, this is a really cool moment. But I was more excited for the fans, man. They were just really happy. And I'm glad that those fans are happy. That is what was made it awesome for me.
There's no question. So I've mentioned it on this show. That my brother is quintessential Tiger. I mean, he is the Tiger guy. There's two aspects of this, though. The Tiger fanboys, my brother included and his friends included, y'all had a lot of boy who cried wolf. Like, there was a good solid 6 or 7 year period where every time he would hit a shot in a club twirl, Tiger's back! Tiger's back! And I'm just sitting there watching, like, this is not Tiger Woods. I knew this time was different last year at the Honda Classic when it was like in February and he started hitting driver again. And I started noticing his numbers with the driver. Like, I was like, oh, this one's different. Because a lot of these other comebacks, like, he had kind of pieced it together. He'd kind of used a lot of Band-Aids. But that one, I was like, ooh, man, his numbers there, like, those are elite numbers in terms of hitting the golf ball. And then he just slowly but surely started trying to get better. And, you know, he contends in the final two majors of the year. And then he, of course, wins the Tour Championship. And all of this culminated into what we saw yesterday. And I am happy. I'm happy for everyone because once yesterday to me was just the ultimate moment of realization that, God, this is just a different product. When he's out there, like, it's just completely, there's electricity to it. For God's sakes, Augusta National, one of the most stuffy organizations probably in the world, they're letting everyone go bananas. They were doing Tiger chants. Like, it felt like a soccer game. Like, it was just unbelievable to watch. All right, let's go to Benji in Germantown. Benji, how are you feeling about it?
So here's the thing that I realized about golf yesterday.
Yes.
For some reason, I haven't realized this whole time. Whenever I'm watching another sport and I develop these conspiracy theories mm-hmm. that referees give certain calls to certain teams
yes.
because they want them to go to the next round and more people will watch, ratings will go up.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was thinking about, they just want Tiger to win because they want the ratings to go up for the match. But then I realized that in golf, there is no officiating. You know, Tiger actually really did and when it won, like, fair and square. He actually did get better. There was no kind of conspiracy theory that you could develop that referees willed him to the win to get more people to watch.
And even further, it's the ultimate, that tournament itself, every single guy that is in contention, like, if they win another major, they'll talk about how great this major is and they'll find some spin zone. But the truth is, to a man, every single person that was out there wants to win that golf tournament more than any other golf tournament, at Tiger included. And I think what made it just amazing is you saw the same elements when things got tight, pressure started to be applied to everyone. He was just nails, man. Everyone else was hitting loose shots, and he just stayed steady. He never made any mistakes, and it was just – it was surgical what he did yesterday.
Yeah, he did what he did. He won. He won fair and square.
All right, my man. Appreciate the phone call. Let's go to Josh in Bartlett. Josh, how are you feeling about it?
Hey, I'm pretty good, man. How about yourself? Big fan of the show. I listen to it every single day.
Well, thank you very much.
Hey, so yesterday was my dad's birthday, and he's been a Tiger Woods fan his whole life. And I'm only 25, so I've been a Tiger Woods fan for most of my adult life. And to see after all the struggles that he's been through, the back surgeries, the torn ACLs, all the injuries and stuff like that, and to watch this kind of comeback the way he did over this weekend and see him, like, push and push and push. I called my dad yesterday because I was driving home, and I heard that Tiger Woods was two strokes in the lead with two holes left. And I called my dad immediately. I said, Dad, the universe wants you to have a good birthday because Tiger Woods is about to win the Masters. And he was like, you're kidding me. He was literally driving too. He pulled over into, like, the first bar that he could find just so he could finish and watch that happen.
It was just – it was an unbelievable moment. Also, Baker Mayfield's birthday. So
I saw that.
On Baker Mayfield and
good
your dad's birthday.
Good
day
for you. Good
no
day
less.
For you.
Josh, we appreciate the phone call, man. All right, Brad, we got also this tweet.
Yep.
And I think this is – I do think this is an interesting interesting point that is made from Julie Bardos. Mm-hmm. I'm an avid golf watcher. Happy for Tiger in golf, but as a female, I still struggle. So hard to embrace someone who had – sex with porn stars while their wife was pregnant. Pretty sure his ex-wife has learned to coexist with him, so who am I to judge? Just hard to be overjoyed. And I think that, I mean, there is that element. I definitely think that, but at the same time, like, to me, it's always boiled down to this. My bigger problems with Tiger was less about his personal life, because that was his, you know what I mean? Like, that's between him and his wife, and, you know, she clearly couldn't take it anymore, ends that marriage. And I'm not saying, like, oh, well, that's like a, free pass to do whatever you want.
Yep.
But my bigger problems with Tiger had less to do with what happened to him personally. It was more just, he seemed to kind of treat people poorly in general.
That was the tweet from Julie?
Yes.
Listen, I can relate to Julie, and I think that she's on to something. And I think you can feel that and still be happy for Tiger because of the larger thing that we all struggle with. And we could get into a whole spiritual conversation about redemption.
Oh, there's no question.
There is a, believe it or not, there is a spiritual element to this in that, you know, that's what fans were thinking prior to them rejoicing about Tiger winning this tournament because... Listen, we all have problems, maybe not as big as his.
Sure.
Likely not as big as his.
Sure, but with fame, wealth, and everything comes bigger problems.
I've done
typically.
A lot of bad things.
Sure.
You've done bad things.
Yes.
Everybody listening, you've done bad things. I'm sorry to help you out here, but you've done something bad in your life, probably not as bad as Tiger. What I'm saying is you can have those feelings and then still go, man, he overcame some demons in his personal life, and he overcame injuries in his body. And he was the biggest golfer before, and you see him do that, and it's an exciting day for golf.
Yeah, to me, I completely understand the idea when everyone says, well, his problems were self-inflicted.
Yes, they were. Many of them, except for some.
I was going to say, so for instance, those were obviously hurdles.
Right.
The biggest issues was literally the guy couldn't swing a golf club.
Well, and if you've read the Wright Thompson column about him doing the Marine and the jumping
the
out of planes, frankly, both things might have been done by him. Not just the personal, but the body stuff was probably him too.
Well,
because
and then there's,
he was doing like SEAL training, which and he was obsessive
links,
about it.
Well,
like,
there were also links to the same doctors that Alex Rodriguez used.
So
why was his body breaking down? There were some legitimate questions.
If you read about it, the personal and the body stuff might have been done by him as well.
Yes. No, I mean, there's no question much of what occurred to him was self-inflicted.
Yep.
But what is truly remarkable yesterday, Dustin Johnson, the number one player in the world, is right there. You had Justin Thomas in it. You had Francesco Molinari, who was Brooks Koepka. You had essentially the two guys that have won the last three majors, and you have the number one player in the world.
Yeah.
You had all of these guys. Xander Schauffele's a top 10 player. You have all of these guys, like the best of the best, were going at him, and he was the one that was still standing at the end. And it's unbelievable to me because I think I had accepted the fact that it wasn't happening again. Like, it was just done. It wasn't happening. It was unbelievable to watch. Chris Harrington is in the building. We'll discuss his Q&A that he did with Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman. We'll also get his thoughts on NBA playoffs and more when we come back right here on the Jeff Calkins Show.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
Chris Harrington is in studio to start off the second hour he does each and every day. Brad, let's fire it up.
Now, it's Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian on the Grizzlies and beyond. Presented by Fleming's Prime Steakhouse and Wine Bar. On 92.9's Jeff Calkins Show.
Chris, what are we listening to?
That is I Got It Made by Special Ed, one of my most beloved rap songs of all time. That is a triple long-distance dedication. First, I'm sending it out to Jason Wexler, new president of the Memphis Grizzlies. On Friday, as I was walking over to FedEx Forum for our Daily Memphian interview with Wexler and Kleiman, I was listening to Wexler talk on the Chris Vernon Show, and Vernon said, "You have the highest title now." And the second he said that, the song started playing in my head because that's the opening line of the song. Number two, I'm sending out to former Grizzly Ed Davis, who had a great game in an upset over for his Brooklyn Nets, an upset over the Philadelphia 76ers. Whenever Davis was in Memphis, whenever he would do good things in a game, John Roser and I would trade lyrics from the song on the internet. And third, I'm sending it out to circling back to new Grizzlies executive VP of basketball operations, Zach Kleiman, because the name of the album of this song is from is called Youngest in Charge.
Well, there you go. That is a... Wow.
Three throwback.
Three different layers. Yeah. Over Kevin Bacon. All right, Chris, let's start here. You and Jeff conducted an interview with both Jason...
Not Wade and Clay Bailey were in there, too. It was a 4-on-2.
The Daily Memphian conducted an interview. The Daily Memphian Sports News Department and editorial columnist held a Q&A with Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman. Before we get into some actual answers that were given, what was your impression of the way that they conducted the interview? What were your takes that you had from?
Well, for me personally, I'm glad they did it this way because I kind of hate scrums and press conferences. The smaller I can get, I prefer 1-on-1. Smaller I can get, the
that's
better.
What she said.
The smaller I can get, the better. Now I feel like I'm on Gary's show.
Mm-hmm.
The smaller the group I can get, the better I think things are. On the other hand, like from their perspective, like they forced themselves to say the same thing like five different times.
Sure.
Like, I mean, I hate repeating myself once. So I can't imagine what it was like for them. At some point, they have to face the cameras and have a press conference and all that. I do think that matters. But I was for me personally, I would rather have done it the way it happened on Friday. I think a lot of their answers were kind of vague, and if you read the Q&A, there's a point where, I don't specify who's asking the questions, but at one point it says, let's try to get more specific. That is me talking. There's a lot of talk of, systems and processes and tools and structures, and that sounds jargony to a lot of people, and I think your eyes glaze over. I do think in reality it is about setting up a better internal process, and what that will mean specifically will determine a lot of whether they're successful or not. But in an interview like this, it really comes across as pretty vague. I thought Kleiman, the interview he did with us, he ended up doing five others that day.
Sure.
But the interview he did with us was his very first interview in his new job, anywhere. I thought he was good, but I think he came across probably a little more defensive than he needed to be because it was justify yourself, kid. It was that kind of thing, right? I had talked to him, and I wrote about this. I did a little notebook column today, and I wrote about this a little bit. I had talked to him before off the record, right? And he was much more assertive about his own talent evaluation abilities in this interview than he had been with me just talking. And I think part of that is he was put in the position to have to justify himself, right?
Sure.
So I think as it goes forward internally, there's something else I wrote about today. Jeff wrote a column, called him a whiz kid, and Mark Giannotto wrote a column, called him a prodigy. And I'll confess, and I've done this with Jeff already on the radio last week, I'm not a fan of that kind of framing. And I think if Zach Kleiman's going to have success, it's going to be important for him to not think of himself that way and to not conduct himself that way. It's going to be I'm not the guy behind the magical wizard behind the curtain making the big decisions. It's going to be I'm managing a process that's effective with a group of people. And that's the way I think he has to approach it if he's going to be successful.
In terms of his actual role, is he in charge of, because there's been, I think there's been some confusion, okay? Is this guy, is he more of a contracts guy? Is he more of the legal jargon? Or is this guy going to run the all basketball making decisions?
He's in charge of the entire basketball operations, although he reports to Wexler, who reports to Para, right? And so everyone who is in basketball operations, and that in basketball operations in the modern NBA includes contract stuff, it includes analytics, it includes old school scouting, it includes all kinds of stuff. All of that is going to funnel through him. There will be people below him who specialize in one area or another, like Chris Makris is your scouting director. He's managing the scouts who are out in the gyms and who are looking at tape, and they're going to, you know, Tayshaun Prince is the guy who's going to be probably traveling with the team and interacting more with players and coaches every day. And I'm sure they're going to hire someone who will be more sort of essentially, maybe in a different title, will take over John Hollinger's role as sort of like overseeing analytics and research stuff. All of that's going to funnel through him. And so he will be in charge of all of it, I think. And he will be in a position where he has to make decisions or coordinate decisions with other people about all of it. And so at the end of the day, I think Vernon asked this question really well in his thing about, he said, you know, they give an executive of the year award. If someone wins it from the Grizzlies, who's it going to be? And Wexler said it's going to be Zach Kleiman. And so that he is the face of the whole thing and he is managing the whole thing, but it's not as simple as like, this is your specialty. His specialty has to be everything now, but he has to utilize a staff.
What do you make of the way that they're structuring it now?
Well, we're going to find out because they still have more hires to make.
Sure.
And so it's hard to answer that question until they make more hires. You know, rumor came out over the weekend that they're talking to Rich Cho, who is someone who is out of the league now, like as of a year ago, recently out of the league, but has 20 years of experience in high-level jobs in three different NBA front offices. Whether he would be the exact right person to hire, that I don't know. But I think they need people with operational experience added to that front office, and so he would qualify, right?
Yes.
He was the GM of the Hornets. He was the GM of the Blazers. He was the assistant GM of the Thunder. Like, that's a lot of experience. So I think we'll see what these hires are they make. And then it's going to be about what they do, right? I mean, they can have as many interviews as they want, and they can talk about better systems and tools and processes, but we're going to judge them ultimately not on what they say to us, but what they do running a basketball team. And I think it could go any which way. Like, this is not what I would have done, right? I don't want to sound like I'm sort of defending it in the sense that I think they made the right decision. I think it seems to me, I'm very impressed with Zach Kleiman, but it seems to me a little bit too much too soon. Like,
sure.
I would not have put him in charge of the basketball team last week. I would have let him marinate as an assistant GM a little bit longer. But they have more information than I do. Like the point that Jason Wexler made is, like, I've seen him work every day up close. Like, I've seen him on the job, and we believe in his talent. And so we'll see if they're right about that.
All right, we'll get into more on Zach Kleiman in just a moment. But I wanted to ask, how did Kleiman, the very first question I believe that y'all asked was, what was the rationale for the way that they handled the firing of J.B. Bickerstaff, the reassigning of Chris Wallace?
Yeah, I think that was not really our first question. We sort of cycled back to that. I asked the first question out of the gate, and my question was, why did you do this? I didn't mean the process of the PR. I meant, like, why did you make substantive changes in your organization?
Right.
And to me, ultimately, the what is more important than the how. I think the how was a good, like, one-day, two-day story to make for good columns and radio talk because it's easy to digest. Like, look at this PR disaster.
Yes.
What ultimately is important is why they changed the people making the decisions and whether the new people making the decisions will make good decisions. That is more important than the optics of day one, right? And so to the latter point, I mean, Wexler sort of said, and I agree, and I've been writing this for the last year or so in different ways, he said, we have been too reactive in our thinking. And if you want to try to find specifics of that, I mean, you can find specifics of you trade two future second-round picks for Justin Holiday because you're trying to cling to a playoff race that is slipping away. Or you trade a future first-round pick for Jeff Green because you're trying to get over the hump, and you don't bother to put the right protections on it, right?
Right.
In retrospect, the outrage of that is not that they traded a future first for Jeff Green. That's bad enough. Is that they gave it protections in a way that it could be an unprotected pick. Like, that should have been something that is, you know, it's protected for 4 or 5 years, and then after 5 years, it just becomes 2 seconds, right?
Right.
You negotiate that to the point that if they're not willing to do something that never becomes an unprotected pick, then you don't do it, right? And so I think they see fairly that there's been a lack of attention to detail and a lack of precision and a sense of just like flying by the seat of your pants in this front office for the last few years. They saw that it's a problem that needed to be corrected. And I think they are fully correct on the diagnosis. Now, are they right on the prescription? That I'm not sure about, and that's what we'll find out. But they made the case that we needed to make a change in the front office because it wasn't operating as well as it should. I think with the J.B. Bickerstaff thing, I wrote about this a little bit more today. To me, that was really simple. It was new management wants to put their own guy
right.
in.
If you're going to have a new front office.
And if you look at, there's been all this talk about, look at all the coaches Para keeps running through. But if you look at it, the only coach, there's four coaches that have been dismissed or either dismissed or not re-upped by since Robert Parrish took ownership. Only one of those four was let go by the person who hired them.
Right.
And what's really happened is that there's been this change in volatility with management, and the coaching changes are like a tremor. It's an aftershock of that. And so Lionel Hollins is the head coach. They come in with a new owner, puts a new guy in charge. New guy in charge wants to hire his own guy.
Right.
So what? Lionel Hollins was good. He's not my guy. I want to hire my guy. So Lionel go, they hire Dave Yeager. Well, Dave Yeager was Jason Levien's guy. Well, then Levien gets booted.
Right.
And Yeager almost left immediately after that. They ended up sticking around for a little while. But Chris Wallace didn't make Dave Yeager the head coach.
Right.
So immediately that goes awry. Chris Wallace, I want to hire my guy. He hires Fizdale. That went wrong for different reasons.
Sure.
But Bickerstaff is collateral damage. Now there's a new guy in charge or new people in charge in Wexler and Kleiman, and they want to hire their own coach. That's the way it works in the NBA typically. Coaches don't typically survive management changes. And so for all the talk of the coaching volatility in Memphis, it's really been a result, I think, mostly of management changes.
Yeah, I mean, in fairness, I don't even think this is exclusive to basketball. I mean, this happens in NFL. I mean, even, you know, one of the things you see in college athletics is if you get a new AD, and you even if you've been a fairly successful college coach, if a new athletic director comes in, there's always the concern, well, what if he wants his guy?
Right.
And so I do think that's very interesting. Okay, is it fair to say for a few weeks, you more or less held the opinion that if there was going to be a front office restructuring it, it would be symbolic's not the right word, but there would be a lot more.
What I said repeatedly all season was there would be changes in the front office. I was certain of that.
Correct.
But I was also certain they would not be total.
Correct.
And is what happened what exactly I thought would happen? No, but that's essentially what happened, okay. Right? Like I felt like I knew that Zach Kleiman and Tayshaun Prince would still be in this front office next season. I didn't know in what role.
Right.
I felt certain that those two would still be here. I felt certain that either Wallace or Hollinger would be out, and maybe both. But I didn't know for sure it was going to be both. But I was certain at least one of those two would be out. And they're both still employed, but they're out, right? And so it roughly matched what I thought would happen. What I did not think, and I knew it was possible, and I'd been talking to people about it. I was like, the last few months I've been asking people internally, do you think they're really going to do this? And what this meant, are they going to put Zach Kleiman in charge? Like, it's too soon, right? I would say people, it's too soon, right? And they would say, I don't know, maybe, maybe not. I didn't think they would move him up this high this fast. That is what surprised me. I thought if they bounced Chris Wallace, they would bring in someone new to replace Chris Wallace and continue sort of grooming Kleiman up the ladder. I didn't think they'd move him to the top of the ladder right now. That's what surprised me.
Talking, of course, with Chris Harrington over at the Daily Memphian. They have conducted a Q&A with Jason Wexler and Zach Kleiman. You can go and read that over at the Daily Memphian. Chris also has a notebook. We'll get into some of that in just a little bit. Okay, I wanted to ask you this in terms of the interview. You mentioned Zach Kleiman. Perhaps if your gut feeling is that it's too much too soon, did your opinion change after speaking with him on the record?
No, because I put more stock into actually talking to people off the record than I do on
obviously,
the record.
Yeah.
and so I have talked to him one-on-one, and I've gotten – I trust my feel I've gotten from him dealing with him one-on-one more than I do in a sort of a quasi-press conference where I feel like you're a little more practiced and you've sort of rehearsed what you're going to say.
Correct. You
know,
it's you have
all
talking points.
Quoted. Right, right. And so, no, I think he's really, really sharp. The best and brightest don't always succeed in this world, and so I don't know. But I think he's really sharp. My impression of him today is no different than it was a week ago. His circumstances has changed, but my impression of him has not changed. And my impression of him a week ago was, that's a really smart guy. He'll probably run an NBA team someday. I didn't think someday was today.
Right.
I'm not sure it should be. We're about to find out, but I think it's possible. The thing about like the idea of him as like a prodigy, which was written about over the weekend, he's not a prodigy. He's just a smart guy who's worked hard and lucked into the right circumstance.
Sure.
Right? It takes both. There are lots of Zach Kleinmans around the NBA.
Oh yeah.
It's becoming a type. You know, the young, hungry, hardworking executive who rises quickly. You can find him all over the NBA. You can find him, the guy running the show in Milwaukee is like 34 years old.
Yeah.
Sam Presti was 30 when he took over the Sonics and the Thunder. There are these types all over the NBA now. I think Kleinman has worked his way into being one of those types by his own talents. He also happened to do so in a situation that where he got this opportunity. I think there are lots of other people who could have gotten the same opportunity if they had been in Memphis in 2019.
Right.
And he would not have gotten it if he were in some other place. And so I think it's a confluence of his own abilities and work with the exact right situation to open up for him.
Do both the hiring of Jason Wexler in his role now and Zach Kleinman's role, does that suggest that, as you mentioned, because of the fact that they're here, does that suggest that part of their selling point was a comfort level with Robert Parra?
Well, I think that's certainly true. And I think that's true generally with NBA owners. Like I was reading about the Minnesota situation over the weekend, and the guy who was basically the day-to-day operations guy while Tom Thibodeau had the title.
Right.
They bounced Tom Thibodeau, and they're keeping that guy. And the reason they kept him was because he developed a good relationship with Glenn Taylor, who's the owner in Minnesota. And so, yes, I think that's key anywhere, and it's probably more key in Memphis than lots of other places because Parra is relatively young and relatively new, and he's not here every day. And so, yeah, I think part of this was Robert Parra developed a comfort level of Jason Wexler and Zach Kleinman over time. And so I think that's absolutely part of it, but that sort of has to be part of it.
What do you make of Zach Kleinman's basketball mind?
I think it's hard to know.
Sure.
It's just really hard to know. I think he's very strategic and detailed in his thinking around strategizing around the cap and around contracts. And that I know that may sound like faint praise, but I think that's like really important. I think people still undersell how important it is. I'll give you an example. This is a small thing, and it probably won't matter in the long run, but you got to sweat the details, right?
Yes.
A year ago, when Marshawn Brooks had the nice spring and they signed Marshawn Brooks, and they gave him a fully guaranteed contract for the next season, fully guaranteed. The same sort of thing happened to Bruno Caboclo this year. They didn't fully guarantee his contract for next season. They made sure they gave themselves an out, and so they can buy him out for $300,000 this summer, and it's not fully guaranteed in the next season. I don't think it'll matter because I think he's been good enough, they'll just guarantee it. But that small little change, I can tell you, and I found out about this early in the season, that was a Zach Kleinman thing.
Yeah.
That was him negotiating that contract, whereas a year ago it was someone else negotiating that contract. And so I think he really sweats the details. In terms of a big picture, how they think about, you know, from a philosophy standpoint, how they think about the right way to build the team, I don't think we know yet. We asked them some of that stuff on Friday, but we're not going to get good answers for that in that setting. We're going to find out in terms of how he thinks about players. I just don't have a good feel for that yet.
Oftentimes, as you mentioned, like the wonder whiz kid, the prodigy, whatnot, it always, anytime you have a young executive, that's usually the way that the young executive is branded. And
right.
Whether or not it's fact or fiction, I think somewhat irrelevant. What I do think is relevant is how good of a job are you walking into? Theo Epstein,
right.
For instance, when he took the Red Sox job, well, you were taking on a franchise that had really done pretty well in terms of drafting, in terms of their minor league system and whatnot. And then on top of that, you had one of the five or six richest payrolls. And so it's a little bit easier to rebuild the Red Sox,
right.
even though someone had never done it. But that wasn't a bad job,
well, yeah.
If you will.
In terms of what he's inheriting, he's inheriting, beyond just sort of what an average inheriting situation would be, he's inheriting some, one really good thing in that he's got Jaren Jackson already in place, right? But on the other hand, he is inheriting at least one more year's worth of contract messes. He didn't sign Chandler Parsons, so
right.
He's got one more year of that. And he's inheriting this draft pick situation, right, which
yes.
Was a product of something he had nothing to do with. So they got to sort of fight their way through, like, the thicket of the Parsons contract and the draft pick thing and get that cleared up. And so he's inheriting, he's got a couple of weights around his neck in that regard, right?
Yes.
What he's also inheriting, and this is partly a byproduct, I think, of some of those decisions, is a team that is not clear where it is in the it's not clear where it thinks it is or where it has thought it is in the competitive arc, right?
Yes.
The thing about the NBA is that you don't judge it year to year on whether you had a winning record or whether you made the playoffs, right? I think among the teams in the NBA, one of the teams that's probably happiest about the season it had, you can question the trade they made before the season, but games 1 through 82, the Atlanta Hawks had a worse record than the Grizzlies. They're probably really happy with their season.
Yes, especially the second half.
Because Trae Young looks like he's going to be an all-star. Yeah. John Collins made a huge leap in year two. There were other first-round picks. Kevin Herter and Amari Spellman look like real players. They're happy with their head coach. They won like 28, 30 games, whatever. They're happy with their season. It's all contextual. Like, where are you trying to get to and where are you at on that journey? And the Grizzlies have been really uncertain, and this is part of the reactive thing that I think Wexler talked about, is what are they trying to accomplish? Where are they? And so I think one of the things they need to figure out this summer is clarity on that, right?
Yes.
Are we trying to be a playoff team next season? What do we think we need to be now to get where we want to be down the line, right? If they trade Mike Conley for draft picks, and like then they will, it'll be a clear signal of, okay, this is a rebuild, and success for us next season is not how many games we win. It's other factors. If they keep Mike Conley and re-sign Valanciunas, and like I don't know what they're going to decide they want to do. And so one of the problems that he's inherited is a team that is sort of in this sort of stuck in between trying to compete and trying to rebuild, and they got to figure out what they're trying to do. And then you judge them on what they're actually trying to do, and I think they've been uncertain the last 2 years about what they are.
Do you think part of the uncertainty, part of the reactionary, essentially, like it's a tale as old as time, a new administration comes in, subtly blame the old administration for the reasons why you're in the position that you're in. But do you feel as if it seems, based upon their answers, that they were very against the reactionary culture? Because it almost felt like the Grizzlies would just, they would go into a season and they would essentially let a week or 2 weeks of either good or bad play completely change the way that they operated.
I think Jason Wexler, who has been around the team for 4 years, not on the basketball side, but he's been close to it. He's seen everything up front, up close. I think he saw a process internally that was messy. And some of that spilled out into the public. The classic example is that Brooks trade in December.
Yes.
It is not, I can tell you, it is not an accident whatsoever that Zach Kleiman's name started to pop up after that.
Yeah.
After that. They made changes internally during the season that in retrospect set up what they did last week, that elevated climate, and it was in part response to they looked and said, we can't keep doing this. We can't have stuff like this happening. This guy may be 30 years old, but like he's careful.
Right.
And he's precise. And like, let's put him on the phone and let's get rid of some of this confusion we've been having, right? And so I think they saw a lot of day-to-day messiness. They saw one of the things that Wexler and Kleiman both said on Friday, Kleiman said, I'm going to work harder and work smarter. He started out work harder, right? And one of the things Wexler said was, like, we've seen him day to day, and we believe in his talent, and no one in our organization has worked harder over the past year. Wexler said the same thing. And I think what they saw internally, like, was, and I was never there, but I've talked to people, like, you go in the offices on a Tuesday afternoon, like, who's working? Zach Kleiman's the only guy there working, right?
Yeah.
Because, like, their player personnel director lives in Iowa, and, like, Tayshaun Prince is more, like, with the team, games and practices. Yeah. And, like, John Hollinger is off scouting somewhere, and, like, Chris Wallace is, maybe having lunch. Mm-hmm. I don't know, right? But, mm-hmm. like, Kleiman was the guy who was in the office every day grinding. And so whether he's going to be good or not, I don't know. But they saw that he was the guy. And I even had people tell me, people who, like, are not in a position to, like, be favorable about what's happening.
Yeah.
Tell me, like, I talked to someone and they said, I can't believe like they're giving him this job this fast. Like, they weren't endorsing it, but they did tell me, but you know what? When he got more involved over the course of the season, things got a lot better. When a lot of the operational stuff like was transferred from sort of Chris Wallace to Kleiman, like it got a lot neater and like we got a lot more organized than we had been before. Even people who didn't endorse what was happening acknowledged that to me.
Do you feel like, so, for instance, I think I tend to agree with you in terms of it almost feels like this is too much too soon. But at the same time, I'm not naive enough to think that if the Grizzlies run a national executive search,
right,
that they're going to be, picking between, the best and brightest. Like, at a certain point.
I had someone else say to me, like, say to me, like, do we go try to hire Sam Presti or do we grow our own Sam Presti?
Right.
And they said, like, we can't go hire Sam Presti, right?
Yes.
We literally can't do that. And so,
I don't actually think that's a bad thing. If anything, I think that's a positive. The fact that you're not trying to be pie in the sky. Like, that is a self-aware decision, in my opinion. And so my question is it almost worth taking the shot?
Yeah, I think it's important. To me, it is very important how they fill out the rest of this front office. And it is important that A, they make good hires filling it out, and B, that it all works well together. And that's what that's what Wexler and Klieman keep talking about. We're going to have better processes, better systems, blah, 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 tools, methods, all that.
Yeah. Buzzwords.
But in reality, it's sort of true. Like, not only do they have to hire the right people, they have to manage them well, and they have to get them working well together and communicating well together. And that's on Wexler and Klieman to make that happen, to make the right hires and to organize it well. And we'll judge them on what they do.
Okay, the other news that of course happened Friday, we did finally see the first set of ping pong balls get pulled, and we know that the Grizzlies will now have the eighth best odds. I believe
we know they will not be picking 6 or 7.
Correct.
We already knew they weren't picking 5, so now we can cross 6 and 7 off the list.
So
they'll be picking 1, 2, 3, 4, 8, or no pick at all.
Correct. And so roughly, I think we both broke it down.
It's 30-something% for the eighth pick, and it's
20-something percent. And 1 through 4.
Yeah, and then 40-something percent. Yeah. The most likely scenario is no pick. If you divide it into 3 groups, top 4, 8, no pick is the most likely.
How much will the NBA draft lottery impact Zach Kleiman's new job?
I think, and this is where people started goofing on Chris Wallace when he said, like, I can't say what the plan is. And I sort of defended him. Like, having Zion Williamson or not having Zion Williamson will dictate direction no matter who you are.
Right.
No matter what franchise you are, no matter who's in charge of that franchise, that outcome will dictate things for you. And so I think they can talk about, long-term, better processes, sustainable ability, blah, 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 blah. But the outcome of that is going to determine a lot. And let's say you get Zion Williamson.
Right.
Like, what's the long-term way you play Zion Williamson and Jaren Jackson Jr. together? Like, they're both nominally 4s now, right?
I think that seems fair.
So can you play them together? I think the answer there is yes, but you have to figure out, like, what that looks like. And what that looks like may determine other things.
Well, and as you pointed out,
do you want Jonas Valanciunas on a 4-year contract if you have Jaren Jackson Jr. and Zion Williamson together?
I mean, that was the first thing you and I, when we discussed, okay, well, let's play pie in the sky, because the best odds anyone has of getting the number one pick is 14%.
Right.
So it's not like this is some overwhelmingly unbelievable better chance that you have. But if you do, like, I do feel like what you do with Jonas Valanciunas in terms of an extension, if you end up offering one at all, that's completely, completely determined by what happens.
Is it possible if you get the 1 pick, you would try to talk Mike Conley into staying because you want him to play with those 2 guys? You stole the pick. What if you get the 2 pick and John Morant's the best player on the board? Does that, like, seal the deal that you're trading Mike Conley? So I think the draft pick situation, they can't have – I think they have ideas in mind of different directions they're going to go based on that, but I think it has to be based on that.
Do you feel like, okay, let's say that the Grizzlies end up getting the number 2 pick, and it seems likely at this point that
you have a fascinating decision.
Does that change Mike Conley's value?
Because people will think you have to trade him.
Exactly.
You could take RJ Barrett number 2, and keep Mike Conley.
Yeah.
Would there be a temptation to do that, to say we got Mike Conley and we got Jaren Jackson and we got Jonas Valanciunas, you throw RJ Barrett right in on the wing and boom, off we go. I think. To me, it is not. I have John Morant too, but to me, it's a discussion at 2. I don't think it's a discussion at 1.
You made this statement on Twitter. I don't believe it was Friday or Saturday, but you made the statement, and I might have fallen into this category, that people got too down on RJ Barrett too quickly. Why do you think that is? And then B,
I think part of it was because he was playing with Zion Williamson.
Yeah.
And the comparison of those.
Yeah, it's the ultimate thing. Like, Scottie Pippen was a borderline MVP candidate. You're finished second in the MVP voting the year after Jordan, leaves. But then when you watch them together, it's like,
well,
with Jordan.
I've seen plenty of mocks that have, like, Jarrett Culver going ahead of RJ Barrett.
Yeah.
And I watched the NCAA tournament. Culver wasn't that great to me. Like,
no,
the team.
I agree.
And so what if you put RJ Barrett on that team and he's not standing next to Zion Williamson, who looks like a superstar right off the bat, right?
Yes.
And then you factor in that he's still 18. Like, yes. Derek Oliver's like 20 or 21, right?
Yes.
And so I think part of it's about this draft. I don't think R.J. Barrett's a lock top three pick in every draft. I think some he is and some he's not. Last year he wouldn't have been. He would have been like six or something, right? Yeah. But I feel like in this draft, I feel like he got picked apart a little bit too much. And when you compare him to other guys out beyond Zion and Ja, to me, he's still a pretty easy pick to be third.
Okay, and then lastly, the NBA Finals did get going on Saturday. I guess the biggest upset was the Magic beating the Raptors in Game 1.
That's the one that surprised me most. I was not surprised by San Antonio beating Denver.
Yes, I wasn't either.
I was not really surprised about Brooklyn beating the Sixers. And after when you actually watch the game,
yeah.
That doesn't look like a fluke. That looks like, oh man, the Sixers are in trouble.
No, yeah, it looked like real trouble. I thought the Nets were the better team.
Well, this Joel Embiid, you know, he's been having this knee stuff. He was good. He was one of their best players after Jimmy Butler, but he looked a little heavy to me. And the chemistry on that team seems really fragile.
Yep.
So I think they're in trouble. Maybe Orlando wins game two and I look stupid. I'm not worried about Toronto yet.
I agree. And the one thing I did want to ask you, though, because I saw it exactly the way that you did, I really think the Thunder are going to be the Blazers. And it was game one. The Thunder, I'm begging your pardon, the Blazers held serve last night. But
right.
I don't know. I think maybe I overlooked how good the Blazers are this year. I think I have in my mind that they're still a team that's just built for the regular season. And then last night,
that's the way I felt about the Blazers for like this whole run.
Yeah.
Right. And like sometimes they surprise me and sometimes they don't. We'll see. I still, you know, the Thunder were my pick before that series. I'll stick with the Thunder in that. But, you know, I'm not going to be surprised either way on that one.
Chris, we really appreciate it, my man.
Thanks.
That is Chris Harrington. When we come back, we will get into some other news, including Will Wade's reinstatement. Surprise! We'll discuss all that when we come back right here on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM, ESPN. Today's special guest host, Jeffrey Wright.
10:36 is the time. Coming up next segment, Jeff Calkins will return back in studio. We'll discuss the one story you've been waiting for. We'll get the full update on just what happened in Jeff's offensive coordinator debut. We'll discuss that. But before we get to that, I wanted to discuss this story, Brad, because this happened yesterday. I don't know if this was officially where, you know, we always see the typical Friday news dump, particularly in terms of political news, Friday, 5 o'clock. That way, by the time you get back to work on Monday, news is done and it's completely, it's just completely bypassed. I wonder if we got what is now officially the Tiger Woods news dump, because Tiger Woods going berserk, bananas. Everyone, they're putting up screenshots of it in Fenway Park about the news that is breaking that Tiger has indeed won the Masters, because this story broke yesterday as well. LSU's decided to reinstate men's basketball coach Will Wade, who was suspended March 8th for refusing to meet with school officials regarding alleged recruiting irregularities. After meeting Friday with Wade and NCAA compliance officials, LSU athletics director and vice chancellor Joe Oliva determined that Wade did not violate his contract and could continue to coach the Tigers next season. Quote, during those meetings, he answered all questions and denied any wrongdoings in connection with recent reported allegations of irregularities in college basketball recruiting. I mean, we have to start first here, Brad. This was one of the more surprising bits of news that I saw yesterday, and I really didn't have an explanation for it, because to me it felt as if the real reason why LSU ends up suspending Will Wade at the time that they suspended him in March 8th is that felt like a legal thing that you do before you're going to fire him. I suppose the conclusion here is they met with the NCAA and they met with Wade, and it seems as if he didn't plead the fifth.
No, and I think it's because of what evidence is available. The FBI denied a request from LSU for copies of the wiretaps or other evidence involving Wade. And so Wade has reportedly turned down similar requests from universities in the NCAA. So it's unclear if federal authorities would turn over evidence that doesn't come out at trial to NCAA investigators, meaning they're going to ride or die with Will Wade is what they're going to do.
Correct. And I think the bigger question is, so if the FBI, because this is one thing that we've seen consistently from the FBI during the college basketball investigation, mm-hmm. when schools or when the NCAA asks for evidence, they shut them down immediately. Yeah, done. Absolutely not. No, we don't trust you. We're running our own investigation. So it appears whatever occurs during the trial, whatever comes out on the wiretaps, that will then become what is lost. So for the time being, if you're LSU, what if that doesn't get submitted as evidence? What if
you ride or die with it, just like you have for this period of time already, right? And then the prosecutors ask the NCAA to hold off their disciplining LSU.
Correct.
So they're not going to get disciplined. So if you're not going to get disciplined, bring him back. Put him out there, ride with this dude and his players as long as you can, and then if something comes out, then you go through that process.
What do you think is more surprising? The fact that here we are in April,
mm-hmm.
and Will Wade appears to be on the path back to keeping his job, is that more surprising, or do you think the fact that 12 jury of one's peers decided that schools were frauded by shoe companies and that someone just goes, oh, well, yeah, they're all victims.
Yeah, none of it surprises me at this point. Again, I go back to the Sean Miller Arizona story because during the NCAA tournament and everything that went on last year, Sean Miller sat, it was very similar.
Very,
if you look at
almost
it.
Exactly.
It's the same scenario.
Yes, Miller's supposedly on wiretaps,
right,
soliciting a deal and whatnot. It appears the difference on that one was there seemed to be more money figures with Will Wade, but it seems to be the same.
But
the same idea.
The only difference is the optics because we have the quotes from Will Wade saying bad stuff and expletives.
Well,
when the Will Wade story broke
this year, that my first question was, why is this news? We already had wiretaps of him last year discussing offers. The only difference is it seems that this time there's better headlines.
And if you're LSU, you have the model. He got suspended. You bring him back. He has, and in Sean Miller's case, he has a number one recruit, like a top level recruiting class coming in. We've got this guy who's going to bring in players, and he's got a decent squad. Bring him back, and we'll see how it goes.
When we come back, Jeff Calkins will tell us about his coaching debut. Stick around. You're listening to the Jeff Calkins Show right here on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Broadcasting live from the Triumph Bank Studios, invested in our communities, making banking easy for you. Let's talk growth. Triumph Bank. It's the Jeff Calkins Show on 92.9 FM ESPN.
Waiting around through ups and downs, waiting on something to happen. I just said,
all right. Robert Irwin Jewelers, 60 minutes, 60% off this Saturday, April 20th. And this time it is at their Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended. 60% off everything. 60 minutes starting at 11. You get 60% off store-wide. Anything in the showcase, 60% off for 1 hour only. Here's the one rule you got to know. Anyone in line between 11 a.m. and noon on Saturday is guaranteed admittance to the sale and may shop as long as you need. But you got to be in line between 11 and noon Saturday. Each Robert Irwin Jewelers has this sale one time a year. And this is at the Robert Irwin Diamond Showroom on Perkins Extended. 60% off designer jewelry, 60% off engagement rings, name brand watches, 60% off everything there. And, of course, the normal wonderful financing is available. Remember, 11 to noon, be in line, Robert Irwin Jewelers, Perkins Extended. If you haven't noticed, I'm back. I am back.
It's good to have you back.
And it's good to be back for the one story that you've been waiting for.
It's that time again on 92.9. Jeff and Jeffrey have kept you hanging long enough. It is, at long last, the one story you've been waiting for.
Well, I made my coaching debut Friday with the Memphis Tigers. And the way it was set up, I was the offensive coordinator. Wolo was the defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
And we went up against Doc and Jarvis.
Mm-hmm.
And it was team radio against TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I got to tell you, I was a little worried that Wola would let me down.
Yeah, no, I completely understand.
And instead, I got to be completely honest about this.
He did.
No, I let him down.
No. We don't tell the story. We tell our story.
The only points that were scored in the we each had three drives that we could mastermind, and the only points that were scored in the six drives total.
Yes,
were a pick six given up by my offense,
by your quarterback,
by my offense. I'm not going to throw the quarterback under the bus.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what you're supposed
to
do.
Not even going to name him.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter. I got to coach better.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I've got to be listen, this is one of these deals where I got to coach better.
Yeah, yeah.
I got to look at myself in the mirror.
Uh-huh. And we know that's not the problem.
And what I see is not a pretty face. My strategy was...
I got to help you with your coaching 101
My strategy
here.
Was this. I don't know. How do you put a spin on the fact that the only points scored were my offense giving up a pick? If all I had to do was not give up any points, and at least we would have been tied or gone into OT. I did save us from OT. That's
there you
true.
Go.
I did save us from OT. My kicker missed a field goal, too.
There you go.
I actually think if you toted up total yards,
yeah.
I think my offense gained more yards than Doc's offense.
Agreed. All I heard was your team couldn't hold on to the ball, and you've been preaching fundamentals all camp.
I've been teaching ball security.
Exactly.
And two of the three drives ended in turnovers.
I mean, at a certain point, listen, you can only call the plays. You can't make the plays.
It was pretty, and my strategy was very clear.
Mm-hmm.
I had no idea what the hell was going on, basically, for any of it, right? Any of it. I couldn't even really put the headset on properly. And I got to work on my clapping.
Yes.
Ryan Silverfield would say, okay, Jeff, come here. Clap twice. Say clap twice.
Mm-hmm.
And I struggle.
You do not have a good football clap.
I struggle with the football. I struggle with the clap, even with the clapping part of this enterprise. And
yes.
I think probably it was my weak-ass clapping.
Yeah. No, there's no question. It's a big part.
That didn't inspire my team.
If you don't think...
Meanwhile, Jarvis, if you look at this video there, Jarvis,
yeah.
he is into it. He's got his team fired up.
Jarvis has a great quick clap, too.
I've seen it in person. I was so much worse at this, but my strategy was to stand next to Brady.
Yes.
And Brady would just look at my sheet, and
yes.
he'd point, and
yeah.
I'd say, whatever he said, I'd do.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I think between us, we made some good calls.
Exactly.
Now, there was one time he pointed to something.
You look great with a headset, by the way.
And I was
proud of your ability to wear a headset. I was worried at first.
But I had no idea what the hell was going on. What I was mostly proud of,
yes,
was the O'Call wardrobe.
Yes, you did look fantastic.
Didn't you think so?
The tiger walk on the sidelines. You looked like you belonged.
I looked like a football coach.
Yes.
With a headset. Like I'll tell you, I wore Brax slacks from O'Call, which are, in addition to stylish, because they're kind of slim fit and they're comfortable as can be.
Like, yes.
Unbelievably comfortable. Gray Brax slacks, and then a Peter Millar blue striped shirt. Mm-hmm. It looked actually like Mike Norvell and I had coordinated, like we had coordinated.
Yes.
So it's what I say all the time. If I want to look good, as opposed to how I used to look, I go to Oak Hall and I say, make me look good.
Yes.
And I did. And you can too. You should get yourself there today. But then once you do that, you should call better plays than I did or do something better than I did.
No. Listen, if I learned anything from covering Hugh Freeze for 5 years, it is that you called the right play.
Mm.
You called the right play. It was there.
I was told that.
Yes.
I was told that it was a young quarterback.
Yeah.
Who made a mistake on the pick six.
Yes.
But I'm not.
Listen,
It's
all part of the experience.
We're going to coach him up.
But I mean, you know.
I will tell you.
What do you want him to do?
Here's what. So what they, what the reason they have you do this is because it get, they want. I mean, first of all, it's the reason they do this is to drum up enthusiasm
and
PR for the game, right?
Yeah.
But then it's also to sort of so you understand what a hard job it is.
Yes.
Right? And I will say it's insanity.
Yes, like because chaos is going on around you on the sideline.
But I will say this. It doesn't mean because I called bad plays and bad things happened. it doesn't mean that I don't think Mike Norvell is immune from being second guessed
sure.
when he calls bad plays.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with all due respect, that's his job,
yeah.
right? It is his job to, within those 40 seconds, and mind you, he's also speaking the language that he actually wrote. Like, I mean,
literally,
all,
that he wrote.
That he wrote. So it's all, yes, it was chaotic and whatever, but his job, the reason that he makes the money that he makes,
yes.
is his job is to, in that chaos, call the right play.
Yes.
And so that part of it, I didn't come away from there thinking, oh, I'm not going to, if against Navy, if
right.
he doesn't hand the ball to Darrell Henderson, I'm going to cut him a break because it's chaotic.
Right.
That is not the lesson I came away from.
Yes.
The lesson that I came away with, though, however, was that he runs an unbelievable football program. Like, anytime you are inside that football program, and this is one thing Wolo said to me. He said, I don't know any aspect of this thing that he doesn't do well. And that, to me, is what impresses me. Okay, he doesn't win bowl games well. Like that, so far, he doesn't win bowl
okay.
games well. And but in terms of running the program, every single bit of that is incredible attention to detail, but not in sort of a controlling, but in a cheerful, upbeat way. Like, everything happens the way it should. The Tiger Walk, by the way, which
mm-hmm.
is incredibly emotional to do on the like. It means something to the people in the Tiger Walk because I took play and I meant something to me.
Sure.
And so that was cool to hear him talk. So he had a bunch of old players there. To hear him address, talk to the old players. He does a magnificent job of that, empowering them, thanking them, making them feel part of the program. Lou Esposito is a former player. I was with him. He's now actually defensive coordinator at Western Michigan. Seeing him walk into the locker room and what they've done with the locker room,
yeah.
he's just blown away by the way it used to be. Just every little detail, the fact that they gave me a football that said honorary coach. It was Jeff Calkins, date, what, like every little thing that the kids listen, every little, it's just impressive. It's just impressive. The more, I would absolutely hire, I mean, I don't want anyone to hire him for a bigger job because I love him being here in Memphis, but like he is really good at this. Like, and it is a massive job. Being a football coach is a massive job, and there are so many parts of it. There's the PR part, there's the CEO part, there's the recruiting part, there's the X's and O part, and I'm just telling you, you should feel like you are in good hands. By the way, you should also feel like if you are over at Triumph Bank, that you are in good hands as well, and I really do mean that. One of the things they do, they have $800 million in assets.
Mm-hmm.
They can do anything that you need them to do. But they're a local bank, started in 2006 because it makes a difference to have a local bank. And one of the you can go in and if you want to talk to the CEO, you can talk to he'll give you his phone number. It's a different personal experience. It's not this big old bank that just wants your money. And I've said this before, but what they did, one of the things they did is they got together and they had all the employees. They empowered the employees to say, how do you want people to feel when they come in here? And there's all kinds of things, words like secure, appreciated, friendly, supportive. And those things are put on what they call the experience wall. So the employees think about that all the time when you walk in. It is just a different kind of banking experience. And, heck, it's a wonderful life. That is honestly, like, when I saw it, like, it's bankers who are invested and in the community as opposed to bankers who are sitting miles away trying to sell you something. And it makes all the difference in the world. Go see our friends at Triumph Bank. All right. What is coming up next, Jeffrey?
Here's what's coming up next.
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jason Fitz will join them at 12:25. Mark Spears of The Undefeated and ESPN will join them at 1:25. Eric will be live in studio today. Jason Smith joins him at 3 o'clock. Gary will also be live in studio today. Michael Evans of ESPN, of course, LA TV. He was in Augusta for Tiger's Master win. He'll join him at 4:20. Jeff, of course, at 5 o'clock.
All right, we got to get out of here. Thank you very much for listening. We will be back tomorrow, but for now, our work here is done.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with autopay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without autopay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.